Welcome. Hola. Bienvenidos. Bonjour et bienvenue to the Social Network Show. Welcome to the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media. We give you actionable information to make your social networking the best it can be for business to business, business to consumer, and for folks who just like to post. And now, broadcasting from the studios of the Hank Greenspoon School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, the host of the Social Network Show, Jim Nico, and Dr. Jane Kawaski.
Welcome to the Social Network Show, and we are going to be talking today with Monica Zent, who is an attorney, but she's also an entrepreneur, and she's also a mom, and she's also a philanthropist. So I think we've got the basic bases covered.
And not to mention an angel investor and a very, very brilliant woman who started one of the hottest social networks in the world called Foxworthy. Jim Nico here with Dr. J, and we have some questions for this dynamic guest of ours, Monica Zent, in the Monica Zent series on the Social Network Show. So, first of all, I'm dying to hear about your social network, Foxworthy, a private social network for lawyers. Please fill us in.
Hi. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Jim. Hi, Dr. J. I appreciate you guys inviting me back on the show, and it's a pleasure to be here, so thank you. And also, you know, thank you for asking about Foxworthy. You probably heard in the news our progress has been great. We have over 4% of the U.S. legal market. We are growing fast, lots of interest throughout the U.S. and other parts of the world asking when we're going to bring Foxworthy to their countries. So it's truly resonated with, you know, lawyers throughout the country in various segments, various geographies, across demographics, from general counsels of the top companies to partners at the top law firms, you know, arbitrators, judges, academic law school deans, you know, small practitioners and solo, solo law offices. We found this has registered and resonated with them in a powerful way.
That's
allowing
great.
Lawyers to, you know, tap into the brain power of their networks and collaborate and communicate effectively and discreetly, you know, especially leveraging our sophisticated anonymity feature in the product. So it's an exciting time, and we're going through a lot of growth. And it's a very exciting time.
Is there any way you can share with us, without giving away trade secrets or anything like that, how someone comes out of the gate, starts a social network, a private niche-oriented social network like you, mm-hmm. and builds the following, the followers or the members? I mean, is there any secret sauce that you can make not so secret?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we focus on two things at Foxworthy. I mean, we focus on both user adoption and, you know, of course, increasing our adoption rate, but we also focus on engagement. And I think it's important to focus on both. You know, from an adoption perspective, obviously, there's no secret sauce. Our growth has been organic. We also rely on our members. You know, our members are strong, and they will invite other members in their networks as well. So we've seen a lot of organic growth and viral growth that way. But then also, like I said, our focus is on engagement, and that's critical. I mean, that's how basically you had, you know, Facebook taking down incumbents like MySpace and Friendster, you know, at the time, who had higher rates of adoption but much lower rates of engagement. And so Facebook came in with a stronger product that resulted in higher rates of engagement, although a lower adoption rate. So that's, you know, why engagement and adoption, from my standpoint, are so critical. And as founder and CEO, as we sort of, you know, look at, you know, how do we direct our strategies from product development to marketing to other strategies, you know, they kind of focus on those two prongs of increasing user adoption but also increasing, you know, rates of engagement. And that means it goes down to product. It goes down to, you know, creating the best possible product experience we can for our members. And we're actively working on that every day. In fact, right now we are making some great refinements, we're redoing some design and, you know, adding some enhanced features to the product and enhancing some features that are already there to increase that engagement.
Now, could you define for us, you know, just what is your definition of engagement? What all is included in that when you say engagement?
Oh, sure. Yeah, for your listeners. I mean, engagement, when we talk about a social network, is really how often are people using the network? How often are they coming back? Are they engaged? You know, are they signing in and never coming back? Mm-hmm. You know, that would be low engagement. Okay. Or are they signing in and returning every day? that would be high, you know, very high engagement.
Okay.
Are they returning multiple times a day? And so engagement really tracks, you know, how sticky is your product? You know, how much are you drawing your users back into the product each day, and how committed are they to using your product? And that really comes down to product execution. It comes down to that product being just right and serving a need and drawing that member back, you know, to the network.
What all do you think actually does that for you? How is it that you encourage users to come back frequently?
Yeah, there are no set formulas. I mean, there are certain things, you know, notifications and sort of, you know, there are things that you know, will keep people sort of coming back to the product. But, you know, there's no set formula. I mean, it really comes down to ultimately creating the best possible product out there. And the better the product is for the members in terms of what that membership base is looking for, that's going to drive higher degrees of engagement. You know, as we all know, I mean, everybody is so inundated with, you know, services and offerings and new services,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's, you know, everybody is sort of on digital overload. And so being able to create a product that differentiates and also displaces what somebody else might otherwise spend their precious, you know, 5 or 15 minutes a day on, you know, it's a very competitive market out there. And so it's looking at, you know, what's going to suit the needs of that membership base, keep them coming back, and again, you know, displace that 5 or 10 or 15 minutes they might otherwise spend on another product.
Well, I think that another great advantage Foxworthy has is that you are actually helping your users get their work done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a time spender, but it's focused on doing what they need to be doing, correct?
That's right. It's you know, we are, although it's a social network with a collaboration component in it. So it's basically, you know, tapping into what your network knows and what your network can share with you, but also tapping into your network for purposes of actually getting work done. You know, answering a question, sharing a document or a clause, you know, exchanging an opinion on maybe a recent case, or, you know, gathering some key intelligence on sort of what are some best practices, you know, that are being kind of adhered to in this industry, or maybe regarding ever-evolving privacy law or those kinds of things. So, you know, from an intelligence-gathering perspective, it's powerful. From, you know, a collaboration and sharing perspective, it's powerful. And, you know, and ultimately that drives the ability to get work done, you know, in this field.
Great.
Wow. You know, it's like I could spend all day on your network because here we are on the Social Network Show talking about a vibrant, private, cutting-edge social network for lawyers and those involved. Now, is it exclusively lawyers? I mean, do you have to be literally a lawyer to be involved? And that's not a bad thing. I'm just asking.
Yeah. No, actually, our product is designed for the legal market, so you need to be a lawyer or legal professional. So we do have individuals who have a strong nexus in the legal market, who are legal professionals. And
okay.
A good example of that may be, you know, an arbitrator. Some of them, you know, may not necessarily be officially practicing law anymore.
Okay.
Or law professors, also very common. Or we also have folks that, you know, have backgrounds maybe where they're expert witnesses, but they have a very strong nexus to the legal community, and they're regularly called upon as experts. There are certain people that, you know, certified paralegal is another good example. So we've
cool.
got folks that are in the legal profession. There's a strong nexus to, you know, their day-to-day work and the legal profession.
I love it. And we want to keep featuring you because that network is so powerful. And it's because you're helping lawyers, I mean, then they can, like, pay it forward in a way because they, okay.
It's
so,
true, yeah. The savings are passed on to the client base, absolutely.
Cool. So can you talk a little bit about, we know that you're a seasoned entrepreneur. Can you share with us some of the secrets, again, that might help others that are going into a field that for the first time, maybe?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, I am, you know, a huge proponent of entrepreneurship in general. I think that it's, you know, if people have the, you know, sort of the inclination, they should, I always strongly recommend it. I mean, entrepreneurship, it's a very powerful and liberating experience. There's a lot of freedom. There's also a lot of, you know, stress as well. So people need to be prepared for that. You know, I've written a number of pieces on this before in magazines and so forth, and I guess drawing from, you know, what are some key points, you know, some key points for any entrepreneur is I would recommend is first is, you know, be prepared that it's going to be a tough journey, you know, is sort of get mentally prepared for that or mentally psyched up for that. You know, I'm a strong believer that half of everything is mental, if not more. You know, any kind of pursuit of any kind that's challenging, whether it's a sport, and I've been an athlete for many years, or whether it's, you know, an entrepreneurial endeavor, you know, half of it is mental. Half of it is, you know, being mentally tough enough to pursue that journey and to understand that, you know, the journey is going to have a lot of peaks, a lot of valleys. You're going to have a lot of highs, a lot of lows, and you have to be able to weather those. And so I think the first piece of advice I would give would be, you know, be mentally tough and be prepared, you know, for the ups and downs of the journey. And that's really a huge part of entrepreneurship.
When you refer to tweaking the social network and your product and so forth, is that something that you had the means to hire experts to do for you? I think one of the things with entrepreneurs and startups is that often resources are scarce, and how did you handle that?
That's a great question. Yes and no. So yes, lean on experts when you can find them. I would strongly encourage, you know, building a network of mentors, trusted experts that you can call upon, because perspective is key. You know, and I think as entrepreneurs, we have to recognize we're not always going to be, you're just not. You're not going to be expert at every single area, you know, necessary to drive forward a successful company.
Right.
So having enough insight about yourself to understand what are your strengths and what are your areas of weakness. And, you know, your areas of weakness, you've got to surface those. And then you seek out, the strategy that I adopted, you seek out, you know, advisors or mentors in areas in which you are not strong. And then, you know, call upon those people, you know, and listen to their advice. And they may give you different advice. You may get different advice from all let's say you have three advisors in, you know, a particular area. You may get different advice from all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
But you can take that advice and kind of filter it, synthesize what resonates or is most useful to you, and then apply that. But, yes, I'm a huge proponent of talking to experts, relying on that feedback, but then also applying that as a founder, you know, applying that to your company. You know, sometimes advice can be given out of context. Sometimes it can take you off track.
Mm.
So staying focused and understanding, you know, knowing enough about what your vision is and synthesizing that advice to apply appropriately to your vision.
Okay, great. In our second half of the show, we'd like to talk with you about how women can counterbalance some of the gender issues and so forth in business settings. I'm Jane Karwoski with my co-host Jim Nico, and you're listening to The Social Network Show. Our guest is Monica Zent of Foxworthy.com.
Questions? Comments? Email us at questions@thesocialnetworkshow.com. We'll be right back.
As internet technology advances, so does the threat of cybercrime. And the instant you go online, you become vulnerable to dangers such as identity theft, computer viruses, phishing, spyware, and more. In times like these, we must all protect ourselves from cybercrime. Antivirus software, firewalls, and security patches are just the beginning. Never open suspicious emails, only navigate to trusted sites, and change your passwords every 90 days. Back up important files to external storage devices. Tell anyone who uses your computer to be vigilant when downloading from the internet. Keep your kids safe on the internet. Teach them never to give out personal information or post information about their school or extracurricular activities. Installing parental control software and monitoring their computer are all good ways to prevent cybercrime. To learn more about cybercrime, visit ncpc.org or contact your local law enforcement agency.
A message from the U.S. Department of Justice, National Crime Prevention Council, and the Ad Council.
Now, back to the Social Network Show.
Welcome back to the Social Network Show, where Jim Nico and I are chatting with Monica Zent. Well, Monica, you've talked about Foxworthy and entrepreneurship in general. As a woman, I'd like to know what strategies you feel are useful to women when they come against someone playing the gender card, you might say, in business meetings or settings and so forth. Can you expound on that a bit?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, I've been in business for many years as a woman competing, you know, alongside men very successfully. And, you know, so I've certainly have, you know, weathered a lot of different experiences and have a lot to glean. I guess the first thing I would say is we want to, you know, gender should never be an issue, right, in business. And we wish it wasn't. I mean, I think all of us wish that it wasn't an issue or it wasn't a topic that people had to spend time talking about, you know, and noticing gender, you know, differences in women in technology, you know, or women in law or women in business. But the fact is, you know, it is an issue still, unfortunately. I think the recent Newsweek cover story that just came out was about women in tech. I mean, it's, you know, we're having to still read stories about the issues of women in technology or women in law or the glass ceiling and the wage gap. You know, this is still very prevalent daily news. And so, you know, I think, you know, until it no longer is an issue, which hopefully someday it will be no longer an issue and not a topic of discussion, you know, it is something that women, you know, need to be aware of and need to be, you know, there can be effective strategies they can adopt to counterbalance, you know, gender as it comes up. And, you know, it's hard to say what works, right? I don't have any secret formula. I think that any of us out there who've been in business for a long time and competed and you know, achieve success in business or technology and law, I mean, we've all been through, you know, and have a lot of the same war stories. So I wouldn't say there's necessarily a secret sauce, but I think there are some strategies that women, you know, in any business or professional field that's competitive, you know, can benefit from. I guess the first thing I would say is being confident, you know, and having an authentic confidence, you know, having a confidence that is real, not artificial, you know, not overly arrogant or overcompensating, but having a calm, strong presence. That kind of confidence is very powerful for women to have. I know that it's helped me, you know, and it's probably one of the reasons I am able to carry myself well in meetings and, you know, negotiations and other settings, you know, right alongside men, is having a, you know, a strong sense of presence and authentic confidence. And that would be my greatest sort of piece of advice for any woman. There have been many occasions in which I have been in meetings or even, you know, in speaking engagements, speaking alongside, you know, fellow women, and, you know, they speak maybe too softly or they don't seem confident or they look down a lot or they don't make eye contact or there's a weak handshake. And these are all very subtle clues that somebody may lack confidence. And, again, it doesn't mean you need to be, you know, screaming or pounding your fist on the table or, you know, overcompensate.
Right.
Again, there's a strength and a presence that I believe can significantly help a woman and help to somewhat mitigate, you know, any perception or stereotypes
attached
to gender.
That really gets into some sociolinguistics, I'd say, in terms of speech patterns, because a lot of times there is a definite difference in gender as to how people speak, but not all of them are bad. But when a person women tend to add what they call a tag at the end of sentences, don't they? You know, or isn't it, or don't
right.
you think? And so that questioning is, in a sense, a request for affirmation or agreement, which is not going to be, it's not going to communicate confidence. And another thing is just ending a question with, not a question, but a statement with a rising tone. That's
right.
That's another way of asking a question, even though you're making a statement.
That's absolutely right, you know, and I think that we've all, you know, and have heard and picked up on those types of speech patterns. You know, and my recommendation even for, you know, young women and parents encouraging, you know, young women or girls to eventually pursue competitive fields, you know, get them into speech and debate. I mean, I started in speech and debate when I was 12 years old and continued you know, through to championships by the time I was finishing high school. And, you know, speech and debate kind of training, you know, for young girls, I mean, it carries with you throughout the rest of your life because you are usually competing. I mean, back in the day when I did it, there weren't as many girls. And so we were competing with boys. And you know, you're able, you know, you're required to think on your feet, think quickly, make, you know, strong statements, be confident. And all of those sort of lessons that, I mean, literally I have used, you know, in my daily life as an adult. So I strongly encourage that, you know, of any parent, you know, of a young girl that is, you know, they're encouraging entering into, you know, any kind of competitive field. You know, and then confidence, I mean, can, you know, it can play a role in many different ways that women present themselves. You know, another example, and I've seen this a lot, and I think women can tend to downplay, you know, their accomplishments. They can tend to downplay what they've accomplished and what they've achieved, you know, because there's these very subtle, you know, sociological attachments that women have to, you know, not being perceived as too arrogant, you know, not being mm-hmm. perceived as talking about yourself too much. And there's a humility that is encouraged in women that usually starts from childhood. And, you know, women, when they get out in the business world, you know, you've got to be able to compete. You have to be confident in what you've achieved and be unafraid to speak about your achievements and your accomplishments and take credit for those.
One of the things I notice about you is you exemplify these very traits that you're recommending and recommending. You exemplify the confidence, the prowess, if you will, and the sophistication of, I think, what women are really trying to strive toward, you know, and that's one of the why I think you're so powerful on the air. And I want to thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure. Well, that's a sweet compliment. Thank you very much, Jim and Dr. J, and I appreciate that. You know, yes, and like I said, you know, it's, I mean, from years of training, also being conscious of it. But it, you know, it's still, I mean, to this day, you know, for any adult woman, I mean, out there, we, you know, there are still challenges, unfortunately. You know, I am a woman in technology, but a woman in business, a woman in law, and, you know, it is tough out there. And so, you know, women have to, they have to work twice as hard. You know, we have to play harder and, you know, work twice as hard, be prepared. You know, it's definitely a tough road, but I do a mentor and, you know, speak with a number of younger women who are starting companies or just starting their careers, and, you know, and this is the same advice that I give to them, you know.
Well, thank you. And the other side, I think, of the coin is that we women like you are the ones that we're connected to in our 50 shows initiative, starting shows for women, by women, about women. And ironically, this morning I was talking to Deirdre Breckenridge, who has a show on our station called Women Worldwide. And talk about coming full circle. She was talking to, I'll leave the name out for the moment because I know the guy, and he's a very powerful man in business and a lot of stature. And it was hilarious in a way because he asked Deirdre, and I won't mention names, if a man could be on the Women's Empowerment Show, which, you know, I got the biggest kick out of that because it turned everything around, you know. And I think she said, I won't quote her, but she said, well, maybe. I mean, so now here's a man, right?
If you're empowering women.
Yeah. Are you empowering?
Right. Well, and that's great. You know, and there are those male champions out there. You
right.
know, you can find them. There are some of those male champions. And I do encourage women to seek out, you know, some of those champions in your network because they can be a powerful advocate for you. And I can certainly point to some in my life, you know, and you're certainly one of them, right, Jim? But, I mean, you know, there are certainly these male champions out there that are, you know, truly the exception, and I encourage women to seek them out. You know, it's not just seeking out strong female mentors, but it's also, you know, consider those progressive male champions in your network and seek them out as mentors and allies.
There's a couple of fellows that a few years ago were doing research on what women want, and they were very surprised to discover, you know, that, well, they kind of like people who talk to them and listen to them and so forth. But they brought out an interesting fact that men, from the time they're little boys, they enter this world of competition. They are little kids in the summertime. They wake up and the first thing is, oh boy, can I do that trick with my bicycle or my skateboard? You know, it's just, it's a high pressure cooker environment, even for little boys. And so I think when you talk about learning to deal with competition and your reference to debate, and of course I imagine sports is probably a something that involves many more women than and girls than debate. But being as so many occupations these days require speech, especially for women, because they're not going to be in manual labor, right? And so that learning to express yourself verbally is so important. And I would say even if parents aren't thinking ahead to groom their child for a particular environment or career, that it's something that every woman needs.
I agree. I mean, that's exactly what I was getting at. In sports, of course, I would never downplay the importance of sports. I mean, I've been in sports all my life, and sports and debate, you know, these are competitive environments for younger kids, and they're also environments where they can learn to compete. And they, you know, for girls, it's especially valuable. And of course, I mean, I think in any field, no matter what field you're in, whether you're in a creative field or you're in a business field or a technical field, the ability to speak, to articulate, to express yourself eloquently and confidently can never harm you. I mean, it's always going to be an asset to have that. So,
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Monica. This has been Monica Zent, and we sure appreciate your coming on the show, Monica.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much.
And foxwordy.com is a one location. You're also on Twitter. And what is your Twitter handle? Can you say
Twitter
that?
Twitter handle, yes, Foxwordy Inc.
Okay.
Foxwordy Inc.
Okay.
At Twitter.
Okay. And that's Monica Zent, one of the most powerful, dynamic women I know. And we're going to have her back. This is just the beginning. This is great. Okay, cool.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
And thank you for listening to the Social Network Show. Please tell your members of social networks, online and off, that you enjoy the show. I certainly hope that you do. And if you don't, let us know why at questions@thesocialnetworkstation.com. Thank you for listening, and follow us on Twitter @SocialNetShow. And we'll appreciate your participation, and please be safe and have fun online and off until we meet you here again.
You've been listening to The Social Network Show, the only worldwide show dedicated to social networking and social media, coming to you from the studios of the Hank Greenspan School of Journalism and Media Studies of UNLV, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Listen to archived shows and follow us on Twitter. The views expressed on the Social Network Show are those of the hosts and guests and may not be the views of Social Network Intermedia. The Social Network Show is produced by Social Network Intermedia, copyright 2012.